Good afternoon. This is KDVS 90.3 FM. This is a public affairs show called Books and Ideas. I am DJ Safikar, and we're broadcasting not far from where the village of Putatoy once stood, inhabited by Patwin Native Americans. This is the fourth and the last week we're looking at The Burnout Society by Byung-Chul Han, which was first published in 2010. We have looked at the first chapters, seven chapters, and today we're looking at the eighth and the longest and the final chapter. I will not summarize what we've covered, but just say a few words about it. The Burnout Society claims that contemporary society is organized around achievement, which leads to burnout and psychological exhaustion, loneliness, and depression. Han argues that our world is characterized by self-exploitations. In the past, we were pressured to maximize our individual productivity by external forces and disciplinary institutions, but we now willingly exploit ourselves in the name of individual achievement and bettering ourselves. Our world is also characterized by hyperattention and access of stimuli, information, and impulses have radically changed the structure of attention, and it's now fragmented and scattered. Why is this a problem? Because thinking requires deep and contemplative attention. It requires staying with the subjects for a long time and slowing things down. Such immersive reflection is being displaced by hyperattention, which is an entirely different form of attention. Thinking is not a matter of being open to every stimulus. Instead, it offers resistance to crowding and intrusive stimuli. It requires lingering, saying no, and making a pause. The third characteristic of achievement society is excessive tiredness and exhaustion. Han argues that tiredness in achievement society is solitary tiredness. It has a separating and isolating effect. It is the tiredness of an exhausted ego. But this is not the only type of tiredness. There is also reconciliatory and healthy tiredness. It opens the eye and makes room for the world. It is tiredness that trusts in the world, whereas eye tiredness, solitary tiredness, is worldless and world-destroying tiredness. Okay, chapter 8 is called Burnout Society, which is also the name of the book. It begins with a reference to the story of Prometheus. Prometheus gave humans the gift of fire, which represents technology, knowledge, and civilization. But he stole it from the gods, and for this, Zeus punished him harshly and eternally. Prometheus was tied to a rock, and an eagle would eat his liver. But this did not kill Prometheus, as his body would heal, and his liver would grow back overnight, only to be eaten again by the eagle the next day ad infinitum. Han turns to Kafka's revision of the myth of Prometheus. Han reinterprets the myth within the context of achievement society and sees the contemporary achievement subject inflicting violence on and waging war with itself. Han maintains that today's achievement subject deems itself free when in fact it's bound, like Prometheus. He argues that the ego that consumes an ever-regrowing liver can be interpreted as the subject's alter ego. The alter ego is a kind of a second self, an alternate self. Viewed in this way, the relationship between Prometheus and the ego represents a relationship of self-exploitation. Hans sees the pain of the liver, an organ that cannot actually experience pain, as tiredness. Prometheus, the subject of self-exploitation, has been seized by overwhelming fatigue. Han then argues that the psyche of today's achievement subject differs from the psyche of the disciplinary subject. And since Freudian psychoanalysis is a product of disciplinary society, it is out of date. Excuse me. Freud defines the ego as a disciplinary subject. Freud's psychic apparatus is a repressive apparatus with commandments and prohibitions that subjugate and repress. Hahn argues that Freudian psychoanalysis is only possible in repressive societies that found their organization on the negativity of prohibitions and commandments. Contemporary society, however, is a society of achievement. Increasingly, it is shedding the negativity of prohibitions and commandments and presenting itself as a society of freedom. Hahn claims that the late modern achievement subject possesses an entirely different psyche than the obedient subject for whom Freud conceived psychoanalysis. Freud's psychic apparatus is dominated by negation, repression, and fear of transgression. The ego is the seat of anxiety. In contrast, the late modern achievement subject is poor in negation, Hahn argues. The work performed by the Freudian ego involves the fulfillment of duty above all. This is also crucial for the Kantian obedience subject. For Kant, the conscious occupies the position of the superego. It is an internal judge whose values and perspective are not voluntarily chosen by us, but internalized into our being. Hahn's point is that the Kantian subject, like the Freudian subject, is internally divided. It acts at the behest of another. However, the other is also part of itself. When we are in a morally ambiguous and difficult situation and are thinking about what to do, then we may find ourselves constrained by rationality and moral considerations to act in a certain way. It is as if we're being constrained to act at the bidding of another person. This sort of split points to a doubled self or a dual personality. The moral subject is simultaneously the defendant and the judge. The obedient subject is not a subject of desire or pleasure, but a subject of duty. Thus, the Kantian subject pursues the work of duty and represses all pleasurable inclinations. In contrast, Hahn points out that the late modern achievement subject does not pursue works of duty. Its maxims are not obedience, law, and fulfillment obligation, but rather freedom, pleasure, and inclination. It rids itself of the negativity of the commanding other. However, such freedom from the other is not just emancipating and liberating. The dialectic of freedom means developing new constraints. Hahn claims that freedom from the other switches into narcissistic self-relation, which occasions many of the psychic disturbances afflicting today's achievement subject. Hahn contends that the absence of relations to the other causes a crisis of gratification. Like recognition, gratification also presupposes the other, or the third party. It is impossible to reward oneself or to acknowledge oneself. Once God represented the instance of gratification, he rewarded and acknowledged moral accomplishment. Because the structure of gratification has been disturbed, the achievement subject feels compelled to perform more and more. Hahn turns to the ideas of Richard Sennett, who has also traced the gratification crisis to a narcissistic disturbance and the absence of relations to the other. According to Sennett, as a character disorder, narcissism is the very opposite of strong self-love. Self-absorption does not produce gratification, it produces injury to the self. Looking always for an expression or reflection of oneself in the other, one drowns in the self. Encountering the other, in contrast, expands the ego into the other, into the world. But when reference to the other goes missing, no stable self-image can form. Sennett maintains that continual escalation of expectations, so that present behavior is never fulfilling, is a lack of closure. Hahn argues that it's the socially conditioned impossibility of subjectivity valid, definite forms of closure, which drive the subject into narcissistic self-repetition. Consequently, it fails to achieve gestalt and stable self-image or character. Hysteria is a typical psychic malady of the disciplinary society that witnessed the founding of psychoanalysis. It presumes the negativity of repression, prohibition and negation, which lead to the formation of the unconscious. According to Freud, character is a phenomenon of negativity, for it does not achieve form without the censorship that occurs in the psychic apparatus. Character contains the history of repression within itself. It represents a determinate relations of the ego to the id and to the superego. Whereas the hysteric shows a characteristics morph, the depressive is formless. Indeed, he is amorphous. He is a man without character. One might generalize the observation and declare that the late modern ego has no character. In positive terms, such a human being without character is flexible, able to assume any form, play any role, or perform any function. This shapelessness, or alternately flexibility, creates a high degree of economic efficiency. Psychoanalysis presupposes the negativity of repression and negation. In contrast, the process of repression and negation plays no role in contemporary psychic maladies such as depression, burnout, and ADHD. Instead, they indicate an excess of positivity. That is not negation so much as the inability to say no. They do not point to not being allowed to do anything, but to being able to do everything. Therefore, psychoanalysis offers no way of approaching these phenomena. Depression is not a consequence of repression that stems from instances of domination, such as the superego. The unconscious plays no part in depression, according to Hans. It no longer governs the psychic apparatus of depressive achievement subject. Freud understands a melancholy as a destructive relationship to other that has been made part of the self through narcissistic identification. In this process, the originary conflicts with the other are internalized and transformed into a conflicted self-relationship that leads to ego impoverishment and autoaggression. However, the depressive disorder of contemporary achievement subject does not follow upon a conflicted, ambivalent relation to the other that now has gone missing. No dimension of alterity is involved. Depression, which often culminates in burnout, follows from overexcited, overdriven, excessive self-reference that has assumed destructive traits. The exhausted, depressive achievement subject grinds itself down, so to speak. It is tired, exhausted by itself, and at war with itself, entirely incapable of stepping outward, of standing outside itself, of relying on the other, on the world. It locks its jaw on itself. Paradoxically, this leads the self to hollow and empty out. It wears out in a rat race. It runs against itself. The late modern achievement subject, with a surplus of options at its disposal, proves incapable of intensive bonding. Depression severs all attachments. Depression is objectless and therefore undirected. Depression is cut off from all relations and attachment. It utterly lacks gravity. The late modern ego devotes the majority of libidinal energy to itself. The remaining libido is distributed and scattered among continually multiplying contacts and fleeting relations. In social networks, the function of friend is primarily to heighten narcissism by granting attention as consumers to the ego exhibited as a commodity. Excuse me. Next, Hahn criticizes Alan Ehrenberg's view of depression, as it's outlined in his work, Weariness of the Self, Diagnosing the History of Depression in Contemporary Age, written in 2010. Ehrenberg's main thesis reads, "The success of depression lies in the decline of conflict as a reference point upon which the 19th century notion of the self was founded." According to this view, conflict performs a constructive function. Both personal identity and social identity are formed from elements that stand in relation because of their conflict. The conflict model dominates classical psychoanalysis. Healing involves recognizing, that is, raising the existence of intra-psychic conflict to the level of consciousness. But Hahn argues that the conflict model presupposes the negativity of repression and negation. Therefore, it cannot apply to repression which lacks all negativity. Although Ehrenberg recognizes that depression is characterized by an absent relation to conflict, he still holds to the conflict model. Depression, he maintains, has a hidden conflict at its basis, which the use of antidepressant further obscures. But he worries that the conflict no longer offers a sure guide. With the gospel of personal development on one hand and the cult of performance on the other, conflict does not disappear. However, it loses its obvious quality and can no longer be counted on to guide us. But Hahn claims, in fact, depression defies the conflict model. That is, depression eludes psychoanalysis. Hahn views Ehrenberg's as attempting to rescue psychoanalysis even though its conditions have disappeared. According to Hahn, what proves problematic today is not individual competition per se, but rather its self-referentiality, which escalates into absolute competition. That is, the achievement subject competes with itself. It succumbs to the destructive compulsion to outdo itself over and over, to jump over its own shadow. This self-constraint, which poses as freedom, has deadly results. Hahn claims that in the transition from disciplinary society to achievement society, the superego positivizes itself into ego ideal. The superego is repressive. Above all, it prohibits. It rules over the ego with the harshness and cruelty of a dictatorial thou shalt, and its harshly restraining, cruelly prohibiting quality. In contrast to the repressive superego, the ego ideal seduces. The achievement subject projects itself onto the ego ideal, whereas the obedient subject subjects itself to the superego. Subjugation and projections are two different modes of existence. Negative compulsion issues from the superego. In contrast, the ego ideal exercises a positive compulsion on the ego. The negativity of the superego restricts the freedom of the ego. Projecting oneself into the ego ideal is interpreted as an act of freedom. But when the ego gets caught in an attainable ego ideal, it gets crushed altogether. The gap between the real ego and ego ideal then brings forth auto-aggression. The late modern achievement subject is subject to no one. In fact, it is no longer a subject in the etymological sense, subject to. It positivizes itself. Indeed, it liberates itself into a project. However, the change from subject to project does not make power or violence disappear. Auto-compulsion, which presents itself as freedom, takes the place of allo-compulsion, compulsion from outside. Achievement society is a society of self-exploitation. The achievement subject exploits itself until it burns out. In the process, it develops auto-aggression that often enough escalates into the violence of self-destruction. The project turns to be a projectile that the achievement subject is aiming at itself. The project turns out to be a projectile that the achievement subject is aiming at itself. In view of the ego ideal, the real ego appears as a loser buried in self-reproach. Ego wages war with itself. The society of positivity, which thinks itself free of all foreign constraints, becomes entangled in destructive self-constraint. Psychic maladies such as burnout and depression, The exemplary moralities of the 21st century all display autoaggression traits. Autoaggression means self-aggression, self-harm. Exogenous violence is replaced by self-generated violence, which is more fatal than its counterpart inasmuch as the victim of such violence considers itself free. Today, violence issues more readily from conformism of consensus than from the antagonism of dissent. In this sense, one might speak of the violence of consensus. Hahn argues that Hamburg's theory of depression overlooks the systematic violence inhibiting the achievement society. For the most part, his analysis are psychological, not economic or political. Therefore, he does not observe capitalist relations of self-exploitation in the achievement subject's psychic maladies. According to Ehrenberg, only the imperative to belong to oneself entails depression. Depression is the pathological expression of late modern man's failure to become himself. Ehrenberg equates this type with Nietzsche's sovereign man. But Hahn argues that for Nietzsche, it's not the sovereign man, but the last man who exploits himself as his own vassal. Counter to what Ehrenberg claims, Nietzsche advanced sovereign man in the name of cultural criticism as a countermodel to the exhausted achievement subject. This is why sovereign man is a man of leisure. A hyperactive person would have disgusted Nietzsche. The strong soul keeps calm, moves slowly, and has an aversion to what is too lively. Thus, Spoke Zarathustra declares, "All of you who are in love with hectic work and whatever is fast, new, strange, you find it hard to bear yourself. Your diligence is escape and the will to forget yourself." The capitalist economy absolutizes survival. It is not concerned with the good life. It is sustained by the illusion that more capital produces more life, which means a greater capacity for living. Concern about living the good life yields to hysteria of surviving. The reduction of life to a biological, vital processes makes life itself bare and strips it of all narrativity. It takes livingness from life, which is much more complex than the simple vitality and health. The mania for health emerges when life has become as flat as a coin and stripped of all narrative content, all value. Given the atomization of society and the erosion of the social, all that remains is the body of the ego, which is to be kept healthy at any cost. The loss of ideal values leaves, other than the exhibition value of the ego, only health value behind. Health becomes self-referential and voids itself into purposeness without purpose. The life of inhabitants of an achievement society is bare because it is stripped of all transcendent value. It has been reduced to an immediate eminency of vital functions and capacities, which are to be maximized by any and all means. The inner logic of achievement society dictates its evolution into a doping society. Life reduces to bare vital functioning. Is life to be kept healthy and conditionally? Health is the new goddess. All right, that was Burnout Society. And next week we go to another book by Hahn, Psychopolitics. All right, here's a song for you.
Setting of the melody from the choral section of Beethoven's Ninth Symphony to the words by Schiller, "All men are brothers, alle Menschen werden Brüder." Praise to joy the God descended, daughter of Elysium, ray of mirth and rapture blended, goddess, to thy shrine we come. By thy magic is united what stern custom parted wide. All mankind are brothers plighted where thy gentle wings abide. Freude, schöne Goethe Funken, Tochter aus Elysium, wir betreten feuertrunken, himmlische dein Heiligtum. Deine Zauber binden wieder, was die Mode streng geteilt. Ah,
alle Menschen werden Brüder, wo dein sanfter Flügel weilt. Build a road of peace before us, build it wide and deep and long. Speed the slow and check the eager. Help the weak and curb the strong. None shall push aside another. None shall let another fall. March beside me, O my brothers. All for one and one for all.
Mr. Thompson calls the waiter, orders steak and baked potato. He leaves the bone and gristle and he never eats the skin. Busboy comes and takes it with a cough, contaminates it, puts it in a can with coffee grounds and sardine tins. And the truck comes by on Friday and carts it all away. 1,000 trucks just like it are. We're filling up the seas with garbage.
Garbage.
What will we do when there's no place left to put all the garbage? Mr. Thompson starts his Cadillac, winds it down the freeway track, leaving friends and neighbors in a hydrocarbon haze. He's joined by lots of smaller cars, all sending gases to the stars, there to form a seething cloud that hangs for 30 days. And the sun licks down into it with an ultraviolet tongue, turns it into smog, then it settles in our lungs. Oh, garbage,
garbage.
We're filling up the sky with garbage. What will we do when there's nothing left to breathe but garbage? Getting home and taking off his shoes, he settles with the evening news while the kids do homework with a TV in one ear. While Superman for the thousandth time sells talking dolls and conquers crime, dutifully they learn the date of birth of Paul Revere. In the papers there's a piece about the mayor's middle name. He gets it read in time to watch the all-star bingo game. Oh,
garbage, garbage, garbage.
We're filling up our minds with garbage. What will we do when there's nothing left to read, and there's nothing left to need, and there's nothing left to watch, and there's nothing left to touch, and there's nothing left to walk upon, nothing left to talk upon, nothing left to see, and nothing left to be but
garbage.
In Mr. Thompson's factory, they're making plastic Christmas trees complete with silver tinsel and a geodesic stand. The plastic's mixed in giant vats from sun conglomeration that's been piped from deep within the earth or strip mined from the land. And if you question anything, they say, why don't you see? It's absolutely needed for the economy. Oh,
garbage, 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 garbage.
Their stocks and their bonds, all garbage. What will they do when their system goes to smash? There's no value to their cash. There's no money to be made, but there's a world to be repaid. Their kids will read in history books about financiers and other crooks, feudalism and slavery, and nukes and all their knavery. To history's dustbin they're consigned, amend